This is A Coastal Story, written and presented by Charlie Connolly. They'd named him Eric, the English, as if he wasn't already humiliated enough. At least in America, they'd paraded him as Colossus, a much more fitting name for a 55-foot, 70-ton finback whale, even a dead one, preserved in embalming fluid, hauled from city to city in a giant glass case. But somewhere out in the Atlantic, on his journey from Boston to the Royal Docks in East London, Colossus became Eric. Named after the popular Victorian children's book, Eric or Little by Little, because when you move a 55-foot, 70-ton dead whale, you do it little by little. And that's exactly what brothers George and John Hill were doing one day in the spring of 1934, hitching one of the most powerful lorries in Britain to the gigantic coffin on wheels in which Eric the Whale was about to make his last journey. He'd been in Southend for a year, had Eric, outside the famous Kersal Ballroom, just a few feet from the beach, people paying sixpence to walk around him, stroking the lines of his flukes, catching their reflections in his sightless glass eye, exiting, naturally, through a gift shop, where Eric fans could buy perfume made from ambergris, extracted, according to the label, from Eric himself. It wasn't from Eric himself. It was basically a racket, but no one really cared. The Hill brothers spent an entire day hooking the carriage to their vast truck and making hundreds of tiny manoeuvres backwards and forwards, shifting what had effectively become a 100-foot-long truck into a position from which it could drive off the forecourt. This was precision stuff, from experienced hauliers to the roar of a thunderous engine and the crunching of a gigantic gearbox, drowning out the sound of the waves breaking just a few yards away. Eric's last journey would take him from Southend to Morecambe. A new attraction was coming to the Kersal, Al Capone's armour-plated Cadillac, bought by the impresario Harry Lebrecht after the notorious mob boss was sent to prison for tax evasion in May 1932 and shipped over from Chicago. A giant pickled whale couldn't compete with the thrilling glamour of the world's most famous gangster. Not even a pickled whale called Eric. That night, George and John Hill took their sleeping bags and blankets into Eric's carriage and unrolled them next to the Leviathan. A long journey lay ahead. They needed to be fresh in the morning. It wasn't a fair contest the day Eric died. The famous whaling skipper David Barnett, 53 of his 67 years spent at sea chasing whales, had the advantage of a rocket-powered harpoon gun, firing huge iron darts with explosives at their tips. They were about 70 miles off the coast of California on the 1st of December 1930 when the whale was spotted. A glint on the surface, his broad back glistening in the sunshine, a fine mist of spouted spray disappearing in the breeze above him. The harpoon hit first time. A small explosion of pink on the finback's flank. The searing pain that tore through him. The spinning of the rope as he dived. The familiar ecstasy surging through Barnett as he set off to claim his prize. 16 hours. That's how long it took the mortally wounded whale to die. He swam as hard and as fast as he could, until a combination of wounds and exhaustion just got too much. The whale made one last deep dive, Barnett would tell rapt US audiences, to drown himself and end his misery. A small crowd had gathered to watch Eric leave Southend for the last time. The newspapers would follow the route closely, meaning people would gather at the roadside wherever the nation's strangest cargo approached. The Hill brothers would get used to that, but it felt unusual at first. Eerie even, those lines of silent faces watching them as they passed. George fired the engine, scrunched the lorry into gear and eased forward away from the Kurzel. The brothers looked at each other and smiled thinly. At 4 miles an hour, the journey from Essex to Lancashire would take 10 days. But after the events of the previous day, at least they were off. It's not clear why this particular whale was picked out for special posthumous treatment. But not long after Captain Barnett had sailed into San Francisco, pulling the giant corpse behind his vessel, the Pacific Whale Company of Long Beach, California, came to an arrangement with the Pan American Train Show, a self-styled cavalcade of wonders. Barnett's prey would be embalmed and sent out on tour as part of its itinerant exhibition. Eric would spend the next year being displayed across America. They tried to bill the spectacle as educational, rather than the macabre cetacean freak show it really was. This was all about bringing natural history to the people, they said. And what better way than with a king of the deep, a whale the posters boasted was 250 years old, older than the United States itself. Finback whales live to about half that age, assuming they avoid the exploding harpoon bombs, so it's clear the academic rigour underpinning this mobile natural history lesson wasn't particularly meticulous. Indeed, every time Eric stopped somewhere new, a local beauty would climb between his massive jaws and be photographed for the newspapers, beaming widely from inside the whale's mouth. The route to Morecambe had been planned carefully, avoiding sharp turns and narrow byways. George and John taking turns at the wheel, then bedding down next to Eric. Drivers by day, security guards for a dead whale by night. They'd make 30 miles on a good day, becoming used to the faces pressed up against the windows of overtaking cars and the heads of pedestrians turning in wonder as the vibrations of the giant rig thrummed through the ground beneath their feet. They passed through Hendon on the new Barnett Bypass and turned north. Eric's American travels began in Denver, Colorado in January 1932 and meandered through towns and backwaters of the United States, places like Jackson, Mississippi, St. Joseph, Michigan, Knoxville, Tennessee, Pottsville, Pennsylvania, Columbus, Nebraska, Bryan, Texas, Ruston, Louisiana, Sikeston, Missouri. Then, in Chicago, Colossus was acquired by Harry LeBrecq, the man who would later buy Al Capone's car, an old-school showman with roots in Britain who'd met the owners of the Kurzel Ballroom, thought the giant pickled whale was just the thing for them, and had Colossus shipped across the Atlantic. The whale arrived at the Royal Albert Dock in Silvertown, East London, on the 1st of December 1932, requiring the services of the London Mammoth, the world's largest floating dock crane, to lift him onto the quayside. Eric rumbled across London for a stint at the Bertram Mills Christmas Circus at Olympia, then had a short spell on Tooting Common, of all places, before in February 1933 he arrived on the Kurzel Forecourt in Southend. The journey to Morecambe was largely uneventful. In Newcastle, Staffordshire, the truck sank into the tarmac and had to be pulled out by steam tractors. And there was a delay in Coventry at a turn that proved much tighter than anticipated. But 10 days after leaving the shores of the Thames estuary, Eric the Whale's last journey ended at the Figure 8 Pleasure Park on the seafront at Morecambe. The Morecambe Guardian made the bold claim that if Eric could speak, he would have expressed delight at being there. Also that his presence would attract visitors and compensate for the town having no swimming baths. And there he stayed. A popular attraction was Eric, although despite the constant reapplication of embalming fluid, he was starting to deteriorate. On hot days, inside his metal and glass coffin, Eric got distinctly whiffy. The economic downturn of the 1930s meant the crowd stopped coming to Morecambe in great numbers, and Eric began to cut a forlorn, neglected figure. The pleasure park was damaged by storms too, until, in 1938, it was closed and dismantled. Eric had to go. But there was nobody willing to give him a home, nobody in the market for a giant, decomposing, pickled dead whale, especially with dark clouds of war gathering on the horizon. So he just stayed there, shuttered in darkness, the rain clattering off the steel roof, the wind pulling and tugging at Eric's giant coffin, just yards from the sea. For many years, rumours persisted in Morecambe that Eric had been buried on the site, beneath the roller coaster that went up after the war. An awful end for a noble creature, but more dignified than what really happened. Eric's case sat in a corner of the old pleasure park, taking up room in what had effectively become a temporary council depot. And the council needed the space. Eric was cut into pieces and fed into an incinerator. The smoke drifted out of the yard, over the beach, and out over the waves, towards the freedom of the horizon. Eric the Whale did live on, though, in a way. On the very day they arrived in Morecambe with their massive cargo, George and John Hall's sister gave birth to a baby boy. What else could she name him but Eric? That was A Coastal Story. I'm Charlie Connolly. And welcome to Series 4 of Coastal Stories. It's been a while, lots of life stuff and work stuff, you know, the kind of thing. But thanks for sticking with us. Two quick plugs. First, the paperback edition of my book about the English Channel, called The Channel, will be out this summer, June, I think. If you haven't read it already, I'd really appreciate it if you could pre-order it from wherever you buy your books. I quite like hive.co.uk. They offer free postage, decent discounts on the cover price, and you get to nominate an independent bookshop to receive a slice of the action too. Pre-ordering really makes a difference getting a book noticed. So it would be great if you could pre-order The Channel by me, Charlie Connolly. Also, earlier this year I recorded two new audio versions of a couple of my books. Attentional Shipping, My Journey Around the Shipping Forecast, and Did Those Feet, in which I walked the routes of some great journeys from history. They were both released at the end of March and are now available for download. They're unabridged, so there's a combined total of just over 24 hours of me talking into your ear holes, as if this podcast isn't enough. It was a strange experience revisiting books I wrote quite a few years ago now. I didn't realise my younger self was so snippy and judgmental. If I run into him, he'll get a piece of my mind. Don't forget to find us on Twitter at Podcast Coastal. That's at Podcast Coastal. And on Facebook at Coastal Stories Podcast. Otherwise, strap in for another series. I do really appreciate your company on this curious, choppy voyage of stories. And there are plenty more to come.